Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Tuk-Tuk Williams.
Yep, best character easily.
We had a great time watching the latest animated feature coming out of Disney, and of course we had to bring a Disney nerd to the table, so we welcome again intern / co-host of the podcast Capeless Crusaders, Amy.
Why did you say that like a question?
He got confused.
I got confused because I was like,
here,
wait a second.
Here I don. I leave my cowl at the door and don on my intern badge with my lanyard and forget coffee. But
truth. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. I do love me some Thursday.
So we got a great show in stores. We're going to be reviewing the recent film from Disney, Raya the Last and the Last Dragon. So stick around. But before we do, Spencer, give him the opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosopher and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 250 episodes. Last week, we did one of the first horror films of 2021. If you're not counting the election that happened and the announcement of the president and then the situation with the virus. Okay, if you're looking at movies, it's the first horror film of the year. Don't shake your head at me.
I will continue to.
No.
Shake, Sonora.
But last week we talked about The Vigil, which is a really interesting film. You should check that out if you get a chance. That was less than 256. And we've had a really interesting last couple of weeks of films talking about really interesting movies from Ma Rainey's Black Bottom to One Night in Miami to several different things. So if you want to check us out, check out our website, filmlosophers.com. Everything's there. You'll love it.
Enticing. Come over to our website.
That's funny. I didn't hear you say anything in there.
Go ahead, sell it.
Let me hear you. There we go. Pin drop. So speaking of selling it, we're going to talk about today's episode or today's review, and that is talking about Disney's Raya and the Last Dragon. This movie has been kind of talked about in several circles, and actually Spencer's going to talk about it this week. No, seriously, sincerely, because of the fact that this was one of the movies that was released via the Premier Access function on Disney Plus.
Correct.
To those who don't know, Spencer is a penny pincher. So when
he's
not.
He's frugal.
He's frugal.
Penny pinching is different. If there's like 75 packets of ketchup in your utility drawer, we might have to have a talk. But so far, I haven't found
You're asking the questions.
My parents did that. I don't do that.
See, he's a step up. He's frugal.
No, Spencer.
We never used them. They were expired for decades.
And they just hang out there. But
we're literally going to run out of time. We're going to literally run out of time on this audio before you guys can. Okay. Spencer had issues with the whole function itself, the feature, if you want to call it that.
Ooh.
So we're going to get into depth again. In all of that. But before we do, Spencer. Give him the official synopsis goodness.
Okay, long ago in the Long ago in the fantasy world of Kumandra, humans and dragons live together in harmony. However, when sinister monsters known as the Druun...
He's doing good.
keep going, buddy. Row the ship a hoe.
I hear Druun.
As the Druun threaten those same monsters that return, and it's now up to a lone warrior to track down the last dragon and stop the Druun for good.
That's right. Good job.
Shut up.
Directed by Don Hall and Carlos Lopez Estrada, the film stars the voices of Kelly Marie Tran, Awkwafina, Isaac Wang, Gemma Chan, Daniel Dae Kim, Benedict Wong, Sandra Oh, Thalia Tran, Lucille Suong, and Alan Tudyk.
Yeah, yep.
A couple keynotes about this film. The production team actually toured Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Vietnam, and Indonesia to get an idea of designing Kumandra and its culture. Kumandra.
No, not Kumandra.
Excuse me. If Spencer can mess up on a word or two, I can mess up on one.
You were laughing at him for Droon.
Because he laughed. No,
you laughed, and that made me laugh.
I laughed because you stopped, and you're like, oh, wait, let's do it again. And it's like,
because I didn't realize that Kumandra was the whole planet.
Because they make it seem like it's just a land on a world, a fantasy
and
world.
And the map, like, it's like land edges, so now I have questions.
It does Avatar jam.
Well, I got very strong Avatar vibes.
Okay, we'll jump into that in a second. Another key piece of information, Kelly Marie Tran actually replaced Cassie Steele as the voice of Raya. Disney replaced the actress after making changes to the character of Raya itself. One of the producers went on to a... interview, they didn't really get much answers out of him other than we changed key parts of the character and we had to recast her. It was a definite. So I don't know if they built the character like around Kelly Marie Tran or they just probably wanted to go into like a more inclusive kind of thing. Like they kind of were like, oh crap, this is a movie about Asians. We gotta bring in more Asians. I don't know, but I mean, it is what it is. And then, of course, this last fact is for Amy. With this film, Raya becomes the new Disney princess and takes the 13th throne of the Disney princesses.
With a
little monster in her mouth.
Sorry if you hear that. So it's going to be added bonus features. Drinking game for this episode.
It's tuk-tuk at the table.
It's tuk-tuk at the table. It might be. I still have that in contention because there are so many Disney princesses and I believe there's more like 20 than 13. But either way, I'm going to let that slide at this juncture.
That sounds like a conversation for another episode.
Exactly.
Or maybe like a special extra credit episode. But
Because I know there's like very strict qualifications from a Disney standpoint on what is a princess versus, you know, having the title princess or whatever.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Apparently the Disney princess is Aurora. So, oh no.
Wait, what?
We'll have that talk later. Ching.
Anyway, so going back to this movie, Raya and the Last Dragon. This film dropped just recently on March 5th, I believe. It was fairly recent. And when it dropped, it was with the feature available on Disney Plus for current users, where for a fee, you would have what's called premier access to the film, which is essentially ownership of the movie.
It also comes with some caveats as well.
We'll get into the caveats in a second. But just to lay the groundwork here, here are the facts. The subscription already has a cost, which is at $15, $19.
I pay the annual. I pay $70 a year.
Okay, so the average person would probably pay $10 to $15 a month, give or take, if they were on the monthly. Okay, so on top of that, Disney Premier Access is a $30 purchase. Now, this first debuted with the release of last year's Disney flop, Mulan.
Live action, not animated. Live action. Don't you dare mess that up.
They better not retroactively premiere. Are you riot?
Like, it's the same as going to the ticket counter and saying, you know, I can't see this movie. I'm sorry. So, at this table, all three of us have access to Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. But Amy was the bold one who decided to make the purchase.
Yes, because...
No, and I'm not saying that as...
I thought it was a dig.
No, no, no.
Like,
I'm not.
Had this talk.
I'm stating it within reason because what I'm about to say is truth. Spencer wouldn't have even lifted a finger to buy this movie. We would have waited until May. Yes.
No,
until June. When it became like it's not even the re-release. It's the world. It's the release, I guess.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, June. June it is then.
He's over here on our schedule. June 1st, Raya, we're reviewing. So I want to step aside from the movie for a second because we'll get into the movie. But what is, Spencer, your biggest gripe with Disney Premier Access?
never before have I been told, well, you need to have a subscription and then give us more money and then you can watch our movie. That is just the most.
Now, they're Disney. They own so much. Oh, my God.
You're going
to blow your microphone out before the night is even over. So first off, if you would have seen the shoulders of this man with the sass that he threw out, that was probably one of the best things I've seen on this podcast. Yeah. Number two, your mic.
Okay.
And then number three, yes, it's a very interesting.
Listen carefully.
I am taking an impartial stance here because I know you are very strongly opposed to it. However, Amy, you felt...
I'm not highly for it, but I can
but
explain.
You saw the reasoning behind it to invest. Yeah. So go ahead.
So in the time of COVID...
Mind you, dear. Keep in mind, Spencer is extremely like just burning a hole through your head.
No,
with
I'm
his
not.
Story.
No, he's burning a hole through your head, not mine.
He's not looking at me. He's looking at you.
I am
he's
now.
Gonna...
Yeah, he's looking at you. So in the time of COVID, as I was saying, we have been denied the access to the theaters, period. Any of the releases for Disney, they would be double dipping, essentially, having you be able to have access in some way, shape, or form on Disney Plus, and then you would be going to the theater, depending upon the size of your viewing party, whether it family or otherwise, and you will be spending, oh my gosh, I don't even remember. I used to think that tickets were still $12. They might be $15.
I think they're like $15.
They're $15.
Now. Yeah. Give
or take. That's $15 a head.
And that's what we know previous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know
and
the current
know
prices now.
Go
like, I don't know what they're
go
doing.
Go in, go out, what it's going to look expensive. Like. Yeah. And it's expensive, right? And then that's when you go for two for Tuesday. You go for matinee price that you you buy one ticket, you bring somebody in.
I don't even know if they're still doing that. No, I'm just
thinking about getting people back in there, though.
Exactly.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, you're going to spend the $100 to rent out the theater for you and 10 of your friends. You each throw in $10 and ta-da.
See, that actually wasn't a bad idea they came up with there.
See, so we have plans. Anyway, so okay. This purchase, the additional $30, it gave me access essentially to feel like I was taking my wee ones, my viewing party, to the theater. So
literally, when you said taking a, I was literally going to say a piss, and then you said a wee, and I said okay, and then you went wee ones, and I'm like, okay, she went that direction. Okay, so just so you know where my thought is at right now.
Apparently, you need to use the restroom. That's not intern duties.
This story took the scenic route all the way along the California coast, trying to get to Denver,
California,
Colorado.
The California coast is crumbling.
This is
crumbling.
Taking quite a long time.
It's very sad, actually.
I know. So the reason I bought it is because I had so many people that I would have taken to see the movie in the theater anyway. And now, if I share my Disney Plus access, I can share the love. More people don't have to pay for it. And my
theoretically,
cost
if Disney, if anybody from Disney is listening, she's not sharing her access.
No, because I have space for 7 profiles upon my account, which are allowed by Disney standards. And at any time, anyone of those 7 profiles can access the content, including Ryan the Last Dragon.
There you go. So, Spencer. How does that reasoning sound to you?
Well, that's fine for her because, like, she's got, like, a lot of people, plus sticking it to Disney, which I like right now. But, like the other side of that is if maybe you're just by yourself and you're like, I kind of want to see this, and maybe it doesn't make as much sense for you. That's all I'm saying.
If you don't love it and you're buying it without and it's just by yourself, I see where the cost comes in. Like,
plus, it's not even really buying because if you stop getting subscribing to Disney Plus, you lose access.
Yeah,
to the movie.
I was thinking about that because if you have let me talk. You can listen. I can turn you down over here. Don't give me that look. it's very different. The term "you own it" has been redefined due to Audible, because if I'm assuming you, Spencer, have an Audible account.
Yeah.
And then Miss Amy across the thing, Madam Intern, you have an Audible account, right?
Yes, I can confirm this.
So when you stop paying for the service monthly, you still have access to everything that you've purchased.
Correct.
Now, if you stop paying for Disney Plus, I'm assuming you stop having access to whatever you've purchased in your account.
I don't know, because they also have that opportunity for you to buy it on Vudu. And at one point when they were doing Movies Anywhere, where they were actually tying their digital options from their...
Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
I don't know. No, I haven't talked to the Disney Plus people. I don't know. I didn't...
What? Buying it in Disney and then having it...
No, I mean Movies Anywhere.
Movies Anywhere
is how they connect that much.
It.
Yeah.
But I haven't... This is my first run at that Premier Access, man. I wasn't paying for that trash fire that was Mulan. I knew better. Like this, on the other hand.
Well, speaking of Asian cinema, let's jump back into Raya and the Last Dragon, because that's what Mulan was. Let's be honest. So... With Raya and the Last Dragon, we have a very different dynamic from what we've seen prior. We're seeing in this movie, like, extreme martial art fighting. You're seeing proper representation throughout, aside from whatever the voice of a tuk-tuk would normally sound like. And by the way, it's not his name. I realized it the second time around we saw it. It's not his name. It's his species. They're called tuk-tuks. Because she says, or maybe he wants to steal my tuk-tuk. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why didn't you give him a name? Like, call him Alan. And just
Alan, come here.
Then we're going to get Jurassic Park 3 vibes. This is a very unique entry in Disney's offering of cinema to the masses. And at a very unique time. We mentioned actually prior to going on air that this is actually the first time Walt Disney Pictures has done a fantasy film, animated fantasy film, since The Black Cauldron.
Which is a fully fantasy world for anyone that's paying attention or asking that question going, wait, no. And Onward was Pixar, not Disney.
Mm-hmm. And that's saying something, because you look at all this time that's passed, you look at everything, and it's like, okay, so it's been over 30 years, at least. Yeah, 30 years, over 30 years. I don't know if I fully comprehend why, but the fact that they return to it is good enough. But some of the first things that I kind of want to talk about as we jump right into the film is the expectations. Now, I want to start with Spencer, because you're the one who most recently saw the film. Expectations outside of the Premier Access thing. What were some of your expectations for the film?
Okay, so I wasn't really like, I don't know. There's something about it that seemed like, from the trailer, I guess, it just seemed like it wasn't gonna be like, you know, the good Disney stuff, but more of like the type Disney stuff. But then I was like, well, why would they make it Premier Access? Because they also released Soul without charging for that. So I'm like, what? I don't understand their strategy. So a lot of it was confusion. Just confusion about their strategy on what they thought of the movie and where they were placing it.
I think the mentality behind Onward was kind of a show of goodwill in the midst of COVID.
What? Soul.
Onward.
The release for Soul was without... having for Premier Access.
And Onward.
Onward was released in theaters.
And was it?
Yeah, yeah. It was released in theaters.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck I'm hearing.
It's okay. You got it. It's okay. If
it was a crazy 10 years last year.
We're still trying to recover from that decade.
Yeah, I mean, one of the unique things about this movie that's part of those expectations for me was like, I didn't really think this movie was going to have a lot of substance. Mainly because of the cast, and I'll mention why in a minute. Not because I'm disparaging against an all pan Asian cast, which this has, but more so for who exactly is in it. But I didn't really think this movie was going to have a lot of substance. I didn't think it was going to be something Pixar level, I guess is one way to put it, because Pixar seems to always send me to therapy every time I watch one of their movies. Like, it doesn't matter what it is, whether if it's toys accepting their death or the entire every scene with Forky's self-realization. Like, seriously, I'm like, I need help. So with Disney Pictures, it's different. It's like, okay, they make the effort, and they've shown their efforts somewhat in the last year. I mean, you look at Mulan,
Mm-hmm. Let's not look at Mulan.
You look at Lady and the Tramp.
Let's not look at
Lady. That was in the last year?
I believe it was last year.
It was when Disney Plus was released, the live action Lady and the Tramp came out, which I still have yet to see yet.
Yeah, I haven't seen any live action.
Or the Dumbo.
Oh, I apologize. 2019.
Okay.
I think it was because
everybody pretty much got access to Disney Plus like right into 2020, and that's when we all realized what was going on, and we're like, "Oh, that right there."
I think the biggest thing for me though overall is that I didn't think there was going to be a lot to the film. I didn't think there was going to be, other than really beautiful set pieces and designs, and it looked, from the trailer, it looked very beautiful, you know, and I was looking at, okay, this is going to be visually stunning. I didn't expect it to be anything more than that. What about you, Amy? What were your expectations?
So with this, I was kind of in the same boat. Like, being able to see the animation, especially in the trailer, I was excited because it felt, not that it was animated Mulan, but it gave more, visually it was absolutely stunning, just from the little bits that we saw. I was excited because it was an exploration of different cultures, and I was hopeful that it wasn't going to be a trash fire like the live action Mulan.
That's a really tall order right now.
Like, not a trash fire?
Well, because, I mean, look at their track record, at least, within the last few films that they've released. Walt Disney Pictures. I'm not talking about Pixar.
Well, and that's the thing, that literally we're all going to Google, hello, ya googly, can you tell me what Disney movies came out, like Walt Disney Pictures that came out, that were something that moved you in a way that wasn't The Lion King?
And the problem is that you can't really find a good list that separates out Pixar from Walt Disney Studios
now, yeah,
because of the fact that you're looking at a ton of films that were essentially procured through the Pixar, you know, the conjoining, if you will. So,
well, what was the Raya and the Last Dragon? What was the previous animated film that Frozen, Walt Disney Pictures?
Frozen 2, did they?
Frozen?
Because it doesn't.
It is Frozen.
So on D23's website, they actually have a list of all Disney films, and it actually lists out the Pixar ones, at least.
Yay! Good job,
and D23. Star Wars is Star Wars. I am able to guess that that's not directly Disney.
And I mean, that's, I think that's the biggest thing for me, that is, in the past couple of years, what we've seen most often from Disney as a whole has been live action, which I don't have a problem with that, but considering that the whole concept and the place of honor that Disney animation has always carried for so many years kind of got shoved down in remakes, like literally it's like, oh, and we're going to remake this, oh, we're live actioning this, and so it took away that kind of the magic of watching animation, watching somebody who took the time to focus on drawing the same things over and over and over again to create something like that. And Pixar is just a beast in general, because they make us feel, they're everything every single time. There has not been one Pixar movie that I have seen where I don't get feels at some point. And I go back to rewatch it and think I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I'm like, crud, I just found something. I'm super not okay. And
so in terms of Walt Disney Animation Studios, which is what Raya and the Last Dragon comes from, you have Frozen 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Moana, Zootopia, Big Hero 6, Frozen, Wreck-It Ralph, Winnie the Pooh, Tangled, and The Princess and the Frog. And that's how far back I'm
going
to go.
But that's also going to, like, what?
Well, four 2000? Of those, you have to remember, four of those are from the same, you know, from unique properties, from unique individual sequels. They're sequels. So, like, Wreck-It Ralph and Frozen both have a sequel in that one.
Well, that's what we're running up against, because even in between those, you have Mary Poppins Returns live action, Dumbo live action, Aladdin live action, Lion King live action, the Maleficent sequel live action. Like, there wasn't really space to have, like, to have, even though I loved Christopher Robin, that was great too. We don't get a lot of Disney animation within that time period. And whether it's Disney deciding that they want to tell stories that move you because they're like, shoot, we got to keep up with Pixar. Like, we have to put out something that's in the same realm.
It seems like even though they're a part of essentially the same company, it feels like they kind of have this DC versus Marvel kind of competition
inside their own house
where Walt Disney Animation Studios or Walt Disney Pictures cannot do a single live action film, but they can do a bunch of animated ones. It's interesting. I don't know. Like,
it's confusing.
It's very confusing, especially with the whole way it's trying to explain itself. It's like a confused teenager.
Or
like,
just go over to Pixar, ask for some tips on like how they can like better their own.
You know
movies.
They can't, right?
Why not?
Pixar is in the Bay Area.
Where's this place?
It's down in Burbank.
Down in Burbank.
All right, drive.
That's like a 6-hour drive.
You're in the same state.
Like, George, I had a quick question. How big of a pencil type do you use for this? Oh, I use a 12 gauge. Oh, okay. And then
like, there's Zoom for that kind of meeting.
Yeah, exactly. There's Zoom for that kind of meeting.
So do you know what we should talk about with Zoom and that kind of meeting? That this movie was primarily made by over 400 people inside of their homes.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that is true. That's one of those things that it does recognize at the end of the film. That's a really cool little tidbit. But in terms of going back to expectations, first impressions. I want to start with Amy. What was your first impression after the film?
I liked it.
Yeah?
And considering that my brain went to not Frozen 2 or Ralph Breaks the Internet, but Moana, where I jumped for original story into thinking like what followed, this was a great, it didn't feel like you were being hit over the head with a message, but it kept reinforcing that taking the first step, trusting the person that seems to be the untrustable person can reunite your world, can make the world a better place. And there are some things that I'm going to poke and nitpick at just because I can, which I think you know what I'm talking about. But I liked it. The animation was good. The acting was wonderfully sincere. And it told a really great story. And once again, that one solo white guy playing the animal in that entire, Pan-Asian cast. Good on you, Alan Tudyk. Go to Juilliard. Get to be in Disney movies as the animals. Like, get it.
What about you, Spence?
So the more I sat with this movie, the more questions I really just ended up with.
Questions.
Yeah, like overall, like again, the movie is gorgeous though, because there was like one scene where like the boat is going down a river, and I was like, if you remove that boat, like it almost looks photorealistic, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
The story is good and could use a little
bit of
work.
That's a lot of hesitation on that one.
Yeah.
There's spaces he
the
wants to see.
The story is good.
And that's the best way to put it, because saying the story is bad isn't quite right for
okay.
me. But saying, oh, it's good, no, that's not it either. So that's why it was like good with a hesitation. There's lots of asterisks to my good.
Okay.
But
okay.
like,
It's good with a caveat.
Yeah, okay. Good with many caveats.
I think the film was good in its efforts. I think it was a really heartfelt, I'm trying to choose my words carefully because you're right. I don't want to say it was, if I say.
Yeah, now you get it.
Because I don't want to say it was a great effort, because that comes with the connotations that it didn't hit the mark. Where it did hit the mark on most places.
But in some places there were spots for improvement or things, like I said, there are places I can nitpick at because I'm like, okay, this didn't hit the way that you wanted it to hit, or this didn't do what you were thinking it was going to do. And I'm okay with acknowledging that as a longtime Disney person.
But in the terms of this conversation, this is where we get, our job is to get into those weeds. We are. That's what we do.
We get into weed.
We get into the weeds. You mess. Get into whatever you're mess. Getting into. You.
I get into water.
Okay.
I'm a great swimmer.
That's
not even a joke. Like, I'm legitimately a lifeguard with swimming.
Are you sure that's water over there? No,
it came out of your tap.
Oh, well, sure it did.
Spencer!
And that's one of the unique things. Like, I don't want to... I don't want the notion that this film was not a success. There are successes there. I just don't know if they were out of the park successes in certain efforts. And we'll talk about that in a second. And one thing I do want to note, this is a non-spoiler review, so we're not going to get into any specific details because obviously you're going to have to cough up the money and go watch it yourself.
Or you can wait.
Or you can wait until June. And
it's right around the corner.
And then you can come back and listen to this and go, I know what that's about. And I know what that's about. Oh, man, I'm going to have to redact myself.
Yeah.
You got that button again?
No.
Okay. I got self-control.
It's a lot of work for him.
Jumping right in, first thing I want to talk about is the animation style. Like, the animation in this film was kind of, to Spencer's benefit that you mentioned earlier, was really spot on. A lot of the set pieces that they built, that they created, that they drew, whatever they did, they looked hyper realistic. But not to the point to where it's like that, you know, uncanny valley kind of hyper realistic. Yeah. We're not getting into the Robert Zemeckis of animation here. This is just like, oh my gosh, this looks like a desert. Oh my gosh, this looks like a canal in like some Vietnam. Tropic type of Asian country. I was getting there. My gosh. Well, not just Vietnam, palaces, there are other places.
The palaces that you're seeing from the different regions look like they're taken from Thailand and Cambodia. And the detail in the textiles and in the hair types, it's what you're saying.
You're missing another big one.
Keep going.
In the food. Like, the food was very specific to Asian cuisine. Like, nobody talks about congee in circles of, like, Disney fans. Like, who even knows what congee is in those circles? No. I know Amy's raising her hand. I know you know. Because you're
my offspring are Pan Asian.
Yeah.
I learn.
But
I don't eat shrimp. I don't eat congee. That's shrimp congee. So that was.
Have you ever had congee?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Take it easy there, Chief.
But not as cool as some other people.
What about you, Spence? Did you recognize any of the foods that were in the movie?
Recognize? No.
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 Ah, so it looks like you and I have to go take a trip to some place that serves this kind of stuff, because
yes.
I think it would be interesting.
I will drive.
Okay,
there you go. Intern Amy will drive us there. But I have to appreciate a lot of the aspects of the Asian cuisine, whether if it was bamboo, whether if it was, you know, the different types of peppers or things like that that they were putting into the stews or the congee, or even the fact that it just everything just screamed, you know, Asian culture, and not in a bad way. Like when they went to that one village, what was it? Because
the one on the water.
Yeah, Talon.
No, that was part of. No, it was part of Talon.
Yeah, it was part of Talon because it was Tail is the desert place.
Spine is the mountains.
Talon was the next place. Spine is the place where they find one of their people. In the mountains, and then the last place is Fang.
So,
and then
the reason
she's from
why
Hark.
He's saying random body parts is because each place is named these things.
No, they took them out of the people. The different parts of Kumandra are separated out by the different parts of what they would consider parts of the dragon. So there is a part of the country or part of the world that is called Tail because they're at the tail end of this dragon figure of a body of water, and then of course, like we said, Spine is near the spine, and so, you know, Fang and Talon and so forth, and Heart, they all have a place, which is odd because I don't think Heart is actually in or near the
Heart. But they have their castle on top of a giant rock that you could argue is heart shaped.
You know, it's funny. I want to talk about that for a quick brief second. That looked like, the moment I saw it, I'm like, I looked at it and I'm like, that's a donut. That's a donut. Is this the donut place from LA, the one where it has the big old donut in the on
the
top
one
of it?
from Iron Man?
Iron Man 2?
Yeah. Randy's Donuts.
Randy's Donuts, that's right.
Oh, what's bad? I know that, and I've never been in real life. Poor Randy.
But yeah, that was just a really interesting architecture design.
It was
decision.
A big rock.
It was a big donut rock.
With a hole in it.
Hey, if you were going to be able to best protect and see oncoming threats, wouldn't you build your house on a giant rock?
It was a donut.
I mean, but doesn't that mean that, like, your enemies can just camp out at the bottom and slowly chisel their way to your doom?
Well, or like climb up the inside of the donut. Climb up the inside of the donut wall, and then you make your way up. See,
Tony Hawk could get there. We can't.
Oh my gosh. But yes, everything about the visual aspect of this film was beyond stellar. Like, I honestly think my favorite place was Talon because of how vibrant and how bright and how busy. Like, if you've ever looked on YouTube and you look up like street food videos and you go to places like in Thailand or places that are like in Cambodia or all these places that are known for their unique street food vendors, that's what you see. You hear the yelling, you hear the sounds, you see the vendors, you see the booths, you see people, you know, with colorful garb or whatever, and it's beautiful and it's visible in this. It's not a cartoonish representation, it is reality. And I have to appreciate that. What do you think, Amy?
Of the locations, Talon was my favorite. Visually, it looks like a night market. It has the lanterns, it has the color, including the way that light is dispensed or dispersed through the lanterns. So it gives it the glow and it bounces off the characters and the food and everything so wonderfully, and it's so exciting. The other thing that I really, really loved about this world is we kind of started talking about it at the beginning, the design of it. It blends the realism in animation with some more traditional style, art style. So when we see Raya gets a scroll and she opens it up, it looks like a traditional painting. And it has the same kind of flatness that like a traditional painting would. It doesn't have that 3D type of pop. So it's really kind of cool to see both of those spaces and then both of those art styles interact in a world that has as much hope to be fully realized and realistic without being too cartoonish.
Yeah.
What about you, Spance?
So, like, what's so good about this animation is that there's places that they go to and you're kind of like, but I want to look around more.
Yeah.
Like, right. Because like you're busy with the story stuff. And I'm like, but what are they selling? Like what, like show more of your world, because like they did such like such detail in this thing. And it's like, I just want to see like more of it, you know?
Yeah. Like if they're going to build like a, like an RPG game of this, yes, you know, please. People are going to have a lot of fun just exploring the world as it is. And that's one of the great things about this movie. Between that and then in terms of the animation, their ability to really capture like the animated face really well.
Scary.
Like if
some of that's we about to hit one of my sticking points.
Ooh,
really?
Go to town, mate.
Things like Daniel Dae Kim, who plays the father of
Chief
Raya,
Benja.
Chief Benja. He looks like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he looks like that dead on. Obviously, Raya does not look anything like Kelly Marie Tran, but everybody else seemed to kind of have different facets of the voice actor who is playing them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Awkwafina.
Yes,
her
sticking poise.
Like, because at first, like, I was like, who is this? And second, she was human, I was like, oh.
Would that be a spoiler?
They've announced it.
Okay.
It's in the trailers, like when she transforms into the human.
Okay, cool.
I wanted to check on that. I couldn't remember if it was in the trailer or not. Yeah, she turned into a human, and I'm like, dang. No. Like the first time. So that was one of my sticking points.
Okay.
Because everybody and all of these characters, regardless of what form they were in, except for Alan Tudyk being Tuk-Tuk, they have aspects, whether it's their eyes, the shape of their face, where they are mirroring their voice actor, which is amazing to see. But we get to Awkwafina, it is like a freakishly cartoonish extra jaw. Like, her mouth is not that big. It was really difficult for me to watch because I've been watching her and I've seen, you know, yes, she's in Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asians, and she's always like, yeah. And I watched her in The Farewell, which was a complete departure for her because it was just her being her. And in seeing this, we went from her as a dragon, which even as a dragon, it still kind of looks like her, to her in human form. And it was like extra wide mouth. There was an extra focus on her teeth. But it looked like her, but it was just really unsettling. I couldn't get behind it. And I really like Awkwafina, and that was a problem.
Here's the thing about this. They went to extra lengths to making her, the character, look almost exact like Awkwafina. Mm. It's like that extra 10% was a very important extra 10%. And it's like you made the mouth way too cartoonish to where no one else's mouth opened that way. It didn't matter if she was a fantastical creature.
No.
She was in human form.
It was scary. The monkeys did not do that.
That's true. Very true.
Nor the baby when she put things in her mouth.
Okay. I do have this one interesting thought process for Awkwafina. And I don't want to kind of spend too much time on this because I don't want it to be like a negative thing. But we've seen the progression of Awkwafina in terms of her evolution as a character actor through the years. Most notably things like when she was in Crazy Rich Asians or it looks like Crazy Rich Asians and Ocean's 8 actually came out the same year. But like with Crazy Rich Asians, you get like the very first, I believe that's the film that came out first.
Mm-mm.
No?
Ocean's 8 came out first.
Hmm. Who would have thunk it?
Me. I thunk it.
I can see that.
I thunked it good. Now he's kind of speechless, so, which is even interesting.
But one of the things that you can kind of, it's kind of a hot button thing to talk about, is Awkwafina's kind of persona and how much it leans heavily into like appropriating black culture. And we've talked about that before off air and whatnot, how her character kind of acts like she's black sometimes. And the thing is that over the time that she's been in Hollywood, it looks like though her character's kind of stepping back from that like really, really over the top role or character performance. Because if you look at Ocean's 8, so Crazy Rich Asians, she's definitely that like to the fullest. But then she goes to things like The Farewell,
which was just, it was so good. And I know you haven't seen it yet. Spencer, have you seen The Farewell?
Mm-hmm.
It was so, such an earnest performance that there wasn't anything where she's trying to be like extra, yeah, whatever, I'm super funny. It was just her being like herself. Like it's almost like when you turn off the, it's like when you turn off extra, like when someone has a persona that they've been putting forth for so long and you see them like at home, it's not that, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? Like I'm in my bathrobe with a bowl of chips type of jam, but it felt more personal.
Hold on. Pause that. You can't just say I'm in my bathrobe with a bowl of chips and expect us just to gloss over that. What are you walking around in your bathrobe with a bowl of chips at home?
If I have a shirt and a pair of pajama pants and slippers, heck yes. Like, why not?
Okay.
But
we're recording this for posterity. So that way, if ever it comes to the point where like,
sand, salt, you and vinegar guys, chips, please.
Do you guys know that Amy actually went, she went a little nuts. Like she put the bowl of chips on her hand.
She went nuts is what you're getting out of this? Because
what are you getting out of that?
I was trying to make to make the understanding
that the bowl of chips in the bathroom was the part that kind of got me.
The Awkwafina that has been presented so heavily in other films is not the person that's in The Farewell. And so seeing her go from those type of extent of characterization of character performances to seeing her be just genuine in The Farewell, and then moving to this, where for the most part in Raya and the Last Dragon, her performance is tamped down. It is not as the first two, and it's not the same level of The Farewell, and it's nowhere close to the person she plays in Crazy Rich Asians.
Well, and after the fact, you know, you're looking at things like Jumanji. She was in Jumanji.
She was like the assassin / poison person.
Yeah, she was the main guy. Like the guy was using that avatar.
That's right.
But in that aspect too, like she wasn't over the top like she normally is. This is what I'm going to get to. Do you guys feel like as she continues, she's going to become more and more into herself, or do you think we're going to see like a return of that persona of hers? Because she's got the Little Mermaid coming up with Scuttle.
Well, Scuttle's, let's be honest, Scuttle, bless poor Scuttle's heart, is a bit ridiculous to begin with.
But to what extent? In this realm.
Well, I hope she doesn't go full Scuttle. Does that make sense?
I think everybody's hoping she doesn't go full Scuttle.
Back to Tropic Thunder, I see.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, Spencer.
Is this going to be a regular thing now?
Spencer's got this. Spencer's figured it out. I can't say. And her performance in this gave me hope that we're not just going to get zany off the wall, woo, Awkwafina. And I hope that we don't.
What about you, Spence?
All right. It's been a really long time since I watched Crazy Rich Asians, which is a shame because I liked that movie. So I don't quite remember how she was acting in that movie or Ocean's 8, to be perfectly honest. But I do feel like seeing her in this was slightly toned down from what I remember. So I would hope that she has learned enough to know when she needs to. There's probably no reason to go up from here, but like, you know, like what level of like here or down she needs to be.
Yeah. I'm really hoping, you know, and mind you, this is just out of the effort of seeing how people have certain personas about them, and then they take it and they think it's theirs when it's actually a part of someone else's culture. That's kind of appropriating. And not to say that she means it, because I don't know. I don't know her personally. However, it's kind of refreshing to see her be funny just on her own without doing the urban over the top kind of thing, you know? Because there was none of that in this movie. I don't remember any of that in Jumanji. And I sure as heck hope I don't see it in The Little Mermaid, to be
Agreed.
Honest. But kind of moving on, the efforts that the studio is doing to make this whole film a complete Pan-Asian American represented cast, what are your thoughts on it? I'm going to throw it to Amy, because
awesome.
we've mentioned this.
It's awesome. So this takes a kind of a page out of what they did for Moana. Which is going and finding people to act who actively are part of that community and to represent themselves and their community on screen. And I bring up Moana because there was a trust that was created for Disney to help them not only create the story, but to understand the culture, the community that they were presenting on screen, so that it would give not only proper representation, but proper life to their characters, that it would have a more lasting effect and impact. And also Alan Tudyk happened to be the only white boy that was on that one as well. And he again played a character, played a creature. So in seeing this, you can see the care and the work that was put in, and it's good to see, because there has been a consistent struggle for people of color to have to have their own voices and to be seen and recognized in feature films,
yeah,
as
properly.
Properly and more than just the stereotypical,
yeah,
story,
whether or not
of
your
character,
yeah, if you're playing the Chinese or Asian restaurant owner or chef, or if you're playing the kung fu master or the angry landlord person, or the there's a lot of stereotypical
the gangster, the,
yeah,
the one
Asian gangster,
the Asian gangster
who knows kung fu,
the old Asian grandmother in the corner who plays mahjong and is superstitious, like Lucille Song, who plays one of the characters. She's the grandmother from Fresh Off the Boat.
Fresh Off the Boat.
But she's been in in Hollywood for a very long time, and I was so excited because I recognized her voice immediately when she started talking, and thinking that this cast covers a broad swath of ages for the Pan Asian community is really freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And so it made me excited. I liked it.
What about you, Spence? What do you think?
Gets a thumbs up from me. I like these kinds of things because it, like, gets you something like different that you're not used to seeing. And so I am for more stories like this from just like all, just do all the cultures. Like that's what I'm in the mood for.
Heck yes. Let's get
all the cultures.
All the cultures. Do it.
We're gonna
make
one.
You get an animated Disney movie and you do.
Oh,
too.
I don't want a live action.
Nope. Also, this was one that wasn't a musical, which is even more hilarious for me.
True. I was looking at that a little bit ago, and even if you look at the last four movies from Walt Disney Pictures Studios, Walt Disney Animation Studios, Frozen 2, musical. Mm-hmm. Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Not musical.
There was a music. There was a song.
Well, hey, the Princess
we
song.
Needed,
the
Princess song. We needed Slaughter Race.
No.
There's called Slaughter Race.
But it does.
It was, but technically in and of itself, yes.
It does make it.
Well, Raya sings in this.
No, she doesn't.
Yes, she does.
She prays. That's a prayer.
It's still a song.
Excuse
Hello,
me.
Jewish.
Okay.
Jewish, the arbitrators right? of song.
Seriously.
No, prayer Moana, as song.
Moana was a musical.
Yeah, very good.
Zootopia wasn't a musical.
Except for that last sequence.
Except for the very Shakira. Last sequence with Shakira.
Very uncomfortable.
You're like, Gazelle, I can't. it the tigers and the speedos? It
was the tigers. I was like, this is too much.
Damn, some buff tigers.
Yeah, there's a lot of, they primarily deal within the musical aspect, because even before Zootopia and Big Hero 6, you had Frozen
musical,
and then you had there was Wreck-It Ralph and Winnie the Pooh, but you had Tangled
musical,
Princess and the Frog
musical,
Bolt
really
wasn't, Meet the Robinsons wasn't, Chicken Little wasn't, but Home on the Range was, Brother Bear.
Oh, Brother Bear.
I mean, it goes a ways, but no, I don't think that prayer constitutes this movie as a musical film.
I can hope.
But I do have to say, it is very refreshing, and honestly, it is hopeful. It's not fully hopeful, but it's somewhat hopeful to know that Disney is making the efforts to actually create proper representation in their films. Now, the big thing here is consistency, because without consistency, there's no point at all. Like, what would be the whole reasoning behind, you know, doing this one movie and then everything else after the fact? It's going to flop. Now, we do know that they are being slightly consistent, I think. I don't know the cast of voice actors, but with Luca.
Ooh, yeah.
Isn't that a Walt Disney or is that a Pixar?
I thought that was a Pixar.
Oh.
We're going to check
the Googly.
I can tell you in two shakes if I go to not the Googly.
So 2021 June.
Why aren't we watching that movie? That movie looks great.
Right? It's so much fun.
Because Raya's coming out in June. We have to see that one.
Hey, look, I just cleared the deck so that everyone has the opportunity to watch Luca.
What?
Wow.
I just want to watch Luca. It looks great and it's so fun.
Interestingly enough, it is Pixar. Pixar Animation Studios. Honestly, I feel like this is a great entry, though, altogether in the representation of Pan-Asian and Pan-Asian American actors. Unfortunately, I don't know why they didn't have James Hong in this movie, let's be honest.
Exactly. That was the one person I was even like looking to or listening for, like a teeny tiny cameo, because... Isn't the man over 100 voice acting or acting?
Yeah, he's got, I believe it's over 100 voice acting roles that he's done. it's really great, but the fact remains is that the consistency has to be there. That's the bottom line. Without the consistency, you know, it's just another blip on the radar, and that's not good for Disney, and that's not going to be good for any of its subsidiaries either. But wrapping this whole thing up, Spencer, were there any other issues? Because I know you said you had a few.
All right. So keeping spoilers in mind, I have to phrase this properly. So what we're trying to do in this movie is we are trying to stop the bad guys. And the thing is that at the beginning of this movie, you find out that this has happened before. They made this magic crystal, and that brought back people from being stone, but not dragons. And so the main idea of this movie is let's do the same thing again. But I don't understand why they thought this would work and why it didn't work the first time.
Well, my theory, because I do, that is a very poignant and honest question. I really do. There's something behind it. I feel like their answer is going to be because humanity is the thing that came together, that trusted each other, because the dragons were there to help the humans, and the druids are there as a kind of the yin and yang, if you will, of humanity's best and worst part about themselves. And the fact that the second time around, it was the humans who chose to trust each other, because they do say, I almost said Awkwafina. Awkwafina says, you know, well, maybe it's because maybe the world is broke because we don't trust each other, which is kind of foreshadowing.
Yeah, but
I can see that does not satisfy you.
It doesn't, because then that just puts the dragons and the whatever, the Duran Duran at
the Duran Duran.
Like at the beck and call of humanity, which is just slavery, which sounds bad. But I really don't like that. That has terrible implications.
Are you making like a conspiracy theory about this movie? That no. This movie is secretly about slavery?
No, it just like with that, it sounds like it is. And like, I just feel like I feel like there needs to be more in there because like, you know, not Raya, but Awkwafina, because I forgot her name now.
Sisu? Or?
Yeah, that's it. She was with her dragon family the last time, and she trusted them. And like, it either comes across as
human,
like,
Spencer. They're not the ones who need mending.
Yeah, that's
it's the people. We the people. We are the world.
Get out of here with that song.
No.
Yeah, I really hope it's not that, because I don't like the implications of that even more.
So okay. So hold on. Confused. What is it that you're saying the implications are with that statement?
Is that the dragons only exist to serve humanity, mostly, is yeah. What it sounds like. Yeah, I don't like that.
I believe. I mean, they're essentially not to serve us, but to provide, kind of like Maui from Moana. Same concept.
Okay, but like with Maui.
And he was slaved on an island by himself.
Well, that was...
That was different?
No, I'm just saying.
He was also a shark in a skirt.
Yeah, but that's when he got his powers. We're not talking about his powers. We're talking about his punishment.
Well, Maui seemed more of like, here's some fire, peeps, and then like I'm off doing my own thing. Like he
and the dragons.
The dragons, like, no. It sounds like, well, we have to be here, or these fools are gonna lose all their water. Like that's what it sounds like.
Their existence, but that was the thing that I think in watching the movie, trying to maintain no spoilers. The simple existence of the magic of the dragons sustained life within and around this world.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to physically show up every single time to do these things. It was part of essentially who they were for purely existing. And if they didn't exist and that magic didn't exist, then the world itself would die. But I think part of the big thing that we're coming up against, why it didn't work the first time, why the rest of the herd didn't come back the first time it worked, was because they gave all of themselves to ensure that something was kept at bay. And there's an explanation as to what the druid, what the bad guys are, given by Sisu in the movie, which I can't spoil.
Right.
But it helps explain and kind of encompass why it worked when... why the second banishment of the druids works, and it doesn't have to be a dragon to do it. We can talk off air, because then we can talk, you know,
yeah,
spoilers. We can get into the meat.
Yeah.
Yum, yum.
Because I guess I just didn't get what they were trying to go for there. Then.
Spencer doesn't see the good in humanity is what he's saying. I get you. It's I got okay. you, buddy. I got
it's
you.
It's okay. I had people turn and look at me when I was watching it, and they saw Sisu, and they're like, that's you. And I'm like, yay, it's me. And then I was like, so many things that are yes. And then I was like.
No. All are yes. Yes.
All are yes. So all. I have a gaping maw.
I mean, you do have a mic in front of you, so I can't really see.
Wow.
What about you, Amy? Any last thoughts, any last issues or highlights of the movie without breaking the table?
I can't not do that. So I...
Without spoiling anything.
Have a love-hate relationship. And this is a spoiling thing.
Okay.
With James Newton Howard. James Newton Howard was the composer for this.
Yes.
This man aggressively loves synth.
Which, by the way, you heard at the beginning of the episode when we introduced the movie.
So the music is stunning, but there are places this man likes to throw in a synth that I'm like, mm-mm.
Hold.
I like my synth in moderation. I like to, I have particular feelings for it. There are some soundtracks that I love that he created. There's a Peter Pan, a live action Peter Pan he did with a kid, Jeremy something or other, and Draco Malfoy's dad. From way back in the day, there's a song in particular that Disney actually picked up and used literally for everything. It is great. In this, there were so many beautiful compositions that encompassed and felt like it was naturally inhabiting the world. But I had a little bit of a problem with the climax of this movie, and we get like the synth start. Yeah, like get that synth. And then you're like, climax of the movie, and the synth goes away, and it's glorious and beautiful. And I was just like, just that one thing, right?
I don't know if I can agree with that. I feel
you
like
you don't have to agree with me. You like synthesizers.
I liked his soundtrack because of the fact. Well, here's the thing. Uniquely enough, with this film, this is supposed to be music from another world, and. Because it's a different world.
I know, but if the synthesizer is a different world, what are we talking about the theremin? Why aren't we using a theremin?
That actually is very good.
No, don't
sign. Come
how
on!
How does that make sense?
He's a Star Trek fan.
Both of you guys.
I know my demographic.
It makes no sense. I think the soundtrack itself actually worked out because... Seeing as the vibe they were going with and the direction they moved, not just with the score, but the soundtrack, because the score is what James Horner...
Newton Howard.
That's what he did, the score. He didn't do the soundtrack. The soundtrack's something different.
I brought up composition. I was doing well.
No. I feel like, though, it in the grand scheme of everything this film set out to do, I think the... ability that he created the atmosphere really fit for me personally. It just really fit, not just because I'm a synth fan and I like, you know, everything that comes out in terms of that's on the synthesizer. It's just it fit for me. It worked. You know, I don't know if it's just my bias or the fact that
it just worked.
I don't know. What do you think, Spence? Since you're technically the soundtrack person of the show. I'm surprised you didn't bring this up.
Yeah, there's a reason for that.
Oh, boy.
No, it's not even that. It's mostly because, like, besides the last song, I could not tell you a single song from the soundtrack.
Actual soundtrack?
Yeah.
I don't remember any song in the movie, actually, period.
Yeah.
Like, I think those movies that are on the soundtrack were inspired by.
Oh yeah, the movie, like, so on the soundtrack. Because
you have a Gene Anko and then Aiko, and then you have Adele who did a song. Wow.
Which those are inspired because none of those songs are in.
No, they're not in the film.
You're not in the film because the film relies wholeheartedly on the compositional works of James Newton Howard.
So you're okay, Spencer. Don't worry. You're okay.
Anyway, like any of the music from the movie, I just like. Like, if you put it in a lineup, I could probably guess, like, maybe that one. But, like, it wouldn't be a for sure. Oh, yeah, I definitely heard this 2 hours ago.
No, I think the one that really stuck out was the one we used for the introduction.
Which was the last one where we were looking for it. I was like, the one I want is this one.
Which was really good. And I really liked the dynamic of the song, and it works. And I think the rest of the music just kind of blended. It's kind of like that whole Marvel issue that they have with the soundtrack, with the score. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody can really tell the difference between a lot of the different types of songs unless you're like some super fan, you know, or one of us. Like, you can't really tell the difference strongly between a lot of them outside of the official anthem ones.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the same case here. That's not saying that the Marvel movies were bad. That's just to say that their soundtracks, their scores weren't memorable, mm-hmm. you know. And I think out of this entire score, I think the only thing that was memorable was the last song. And mainly because it's pretty quiet. There's nothing really happening as it's playing. But it works. Mm, yes. I liked it. So.
Also, I just want to give one more shout out to I think he's the youngest voice actor in this cast. For, can I even say, I don't know if he's been given a name for Boone. For Boone. His name's Isaac, what's his last name?
Isaac Wang.
This kid has great comedic timing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He is wonderfully vocal. He was the bright spot in I don't know how I'm going to do this movie. And he took space where I thought Awkwafina would have stood up, like, comedically, and he took that, and it was so refreshing to see, and I'm just excited to see what else he does.
See, well, like, he is also, like, a bright spot for me, and he was also one of the things I was getting strong advertised by.
Yeah.
I have no idea why.
Out of him?
Yeah. I don't, like, can't explain it.
He was very Aang.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Like, I kind of see that. But, like, yeah, his performance was something that actually kind of like brought the movie up. It's like, oh, maybe this might not be as bad as I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, after this, he is slated to be a character on the live action TV series, it looks like, for Gremlins.
What?
Gremlins Secrets of the Mogwai.
What?
So that's going to be interesting. Oh, no, I take that back. He is the lead character in this. He plays a character named Sam Wing, and the only description we have is the adventures of Sam Wing in his youth and Gizmo the Mogwai in China.
So is he supposed to be the old man in the first?
James Hong is in it.
Yay, mm-hmm. James Hong.
Ming-Na Wen, B.D. Wong.
Jiminy Crispies.
Yeah. Ooh, that sounds good.
So
they're in all 10 episodes. So
our meerkat senses are tingling.
So wrapping this thing up, this movie ultimately sets out to really create a strong representation of Pan-Asian and Pan-Asian American representation in voice acting. And to be honest, it does a great job in that. However, there are a few flaws here and there, and there are a few things that do cause a bit of a hiccup. But all in all, I have to say the film was good, you know? Asterisk, right, Spence?
Yeah, no, that's where we're at.
So going around the table, let's go ahead and start with Amy, and let's go ahead and see, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
I promise I'm going to do this correctly. This passes for me, of course. It is a wonderful diversion from the outside world at a time that we need it, telling a lovely story with sincerity, honesty, a bit of optimism, and hopefully you get a sense of being a better part of your community. But for monocles, my shiny crisp monocles will need a 4.5 for me.
She's giving me a 4.5. What about you, Spence?
That heavy sigh. It's okay. You don't have to vote like me. I'm the optimist in this group.
Remember, she's Sisu.
I'm Sisu. I'll bring you a gift.
All your presents is a gift.
Yes. One up.
Let's see. That was corny. So shut up. I wasn't talking to you.
That's corny.
Anyway,
Your presence is the present.
Hey.
Okay.
Hey.
We're getting into Christianese over here.
He doesn't get any kanji.
His presence is the present for Christmas.
That's dumb sounding though.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway.
He's just gonna laugh quietly in a corner until he's by himself.
That's how he does it. All the damn time he's laughing at me in his background. Okay, so this movie passes for me. There were a few problems. Maybe I just didn't understand. That's fine. And I'm not going to factor in pricing, which I feel like is being very generous on my part.
No, I think, though, I mean, honestly, it's part of the whole experience.
Oh, okay, I'll factor in pricing. This movie gets a 3 for me. Like,
because if you had to pay for it, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you had experienced this same film in June theater. Without having to... No, well, in June, not having to pay for it, seeing it on Disney Plus, I'm pretty sure you're the bias filter, if you will, of the fact that this was a paid for movie would have been eliminated, and I think you may have had a little bit more of a better time with it.
Yeah, because like the first 10 minutes of this movie were just like, I can't believe they were charging $30 for this movie. Who do they think they are?
Disney. That's who they think.
Yeah,
they
how 3 monocles are sufficient. Eddie.
All right. Well, in terms of pass or fail, the film passes for me. It does have a very decent and very strong story. The execution on it was pretty there. There were a couple of hiccups here and there in terms of storyline, but that's getting into spoiler territory. All in all, I think the film does a successful job at creating, like I said earlier, the proper Asian and Pan-Asian... Pan-Asian and Pan-Asian American representation in animation films. Now let's see Disney do it with everything else. In terms of monocles, this movie is going to get a 3.8. I like the movie. I like what it does. I like Kelly Marie Tran finally getting starring roles. I like seeing some of these Asian actors who are usually put as supporting roles given strong character roles in this film. And I have to applaud that. Seeing Sandra Oh like kill it as this like scary queen / war chief is...
She's so methodical and logical. You have to see this movie come June and then go like, hey, you guys, when you're talking about Sandra Oh in this movie, yes.
I do appreciate Sandra Oh's character. Yeah. So on point, it's like, well, this is like the best for us, so let's do this. I'm like, this makes sense.
Yeah. And between that and Gemma Chan, seeing her in a more aggressive role like this was money. It was a really great role for her. So I'm anxious to see a lot more of this. So here's to hoping, right? But, yep, that wraps up another awesome episode of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Again, check out all of our previous episodes as well as this one, and let us know what you think. Drop us a line, drop us a review, 5 stars. We would appreciate it. But that wraps up another awesome episode, and this was a really great effort on Disney's part. I'm just hoping to see the consistency. We all are hoping to see that consistency, so as Filmlosophers, we will be looking out. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm still interning.
Class dismissed.